Well, we are at the end of the church year. We're getting close to it. Next Sunday is technically the end. And as we get to the end of the church year, everything kind of shifts in all of our readings. It goes from the ways that we see God at work in us and in our community to the ways that we're going to see God at the end of all things. End of the church year, end of the world. Sure, let's just put it all together, right? And it can be an off-putting kind of part of the church season. We don't like to talk about the end of all things. It makes us nervous. There's plenty of scary things out of our control. Let's not talk about it. Let's just hear nice, fluffy, warm, comforting things. But thanks be to God, that's not the kind of church we live in, nor is it the kind of world we live in. Because if everything was always easy, what would we miss out on? We'd miss out on a chance to trust in God. So here at the end of our church year, we turn to a little bit of the dark things of the world. We turn to remember where God can be found when everything is falling apart. But like I tell you all the time, context matters. So when we're reading this from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 21, I want you to remember there's only 24 chapters in Luke, and you already know the ending. At this point, Jesus has already made his way into Jerusalem. It is the last week of his life. And he is there among the marketplaces and this golden, glittering temple that King Herod had built, different Herod, years before. And here we are, about time for him to be betrayed and arrested and questioned by religious leaders and then by governors and then by kings. So at this point, it's not just the end of Luke, it's toward the end of Jesus' life. And so he doesn't have time to stop and smell the flowers, and he doesn't have time to sit back and gawk at this golden, gleaming house that belongs to God. So when all the people around him say, "Look, Jesus, what a large building, what beautiful stones," he doesn't have time for that. In fact, he has just showed them something so minute, so small that nobody else notices, of a widow putting in her last two coins. And all that the people around him see is, "Wow, what a great building." They're missing what's important. And so Jesus, kind of in a shock and awe move, tells them, "At the end of all things, not even one stone will be left on top of the other. They will all be ripped down and crushed." And he gets their attention. Imagine that. That seems to clue them in to pay attention to what he's about to say. And they all get worried. "When is this going to happen, Jesus? Can you tell us the signs so that we can be ready for it?" And Jesus doesn't disappoint. I mean, he doesn't tell them when, but he tells them all the signs to look for. He says that nation will be rising against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and classmate against classmate. And there will be massive earthquakes in all these places. There will be famine, and there will be illnesses that spread, and there will be wind in Fairbanks, and there will be no sea ice in Kaktovik. And in the middle of all of that, Jesus shares more good news. "Before all that's going to happen, you will be arrested, betrayed, persecuted, questioned, and some of you will die." End of sermon. And he tells them this odd thing not to prepare ahead of time what they're going to say. You would think if all these things are coming that they should sit down and write out a good way to tell people what's happening and that God is with them and that God is here to guide us to new heaven and a new earth, and that they should plan out what they're going to say. But Jesus says, "Don't bother. The world is going to be changing so fast, you're not going to be able to keep up. And if you read off your little script, nobody's going to listen. But this will give you an opportunity to testify." And Jesus then says, "I will give you the words and the wisdom to use it in that day." See, in the middle of all that scary stuff, really, Jesus is calling them to one simple thing. He's calling them to trust. That all the things that will be going on are enough to shake your foundations and make you afraid, but that's not what God hopes for you. God hopes that you will have an opportunity to trust, to know that it's not on your shoulders, but it's on God's. And so the mantra becomes trust in God, Trust in God. Trust in God. So remember what I said before about context? It's not just that we're looking at Luke 21 out of 24, but we're looking at first century Christians too, the people who got Luke's letter and started to read it. And these people have seen the destruction of the temple. They have seen every stone pulled down and crumbled in the middle of the streets. They have seen Jesus already die, and they have heard the stories of him being resurrected. And only those lucky disciples, about 500 of them actually, got to see Jesus walk around alive. And so that has been motivation for them. As they're reading these words of Jesus said that the rocks would be torn down, it gives them that encouragement. They knew it was coming. They have now seen it come, and now is their opportunity to testify. Those first century Christians reading this stuff went, oh, that's right. Now we can start talking about God. And so they go out and they share their faith, and they tell others about what's going on. This letter is meant to encourage them of what's happening, what they see around them, knowing that it's all in God's hands and that they can trust in God because God's going to give them the words and the wisdom, so they go out and share that message. But some of them don't. Some of them have a little bit too close of a brush with reality. That they look around at everything happening, the nation against nation and the kingdom against kingdom and the earthquakes and the famines and the illnesses, and they go, well, that means God is coming soon, so we're just going to wait. I mean, if God is coming to fix all these things anyway, why should I have to go out and work at it? I mean, all these signs mean God is coming soon. So if God's coming soon, that means it's all going to get fixed soon, so I don't have to do anything. And so they sit back, and they become lazy. Hopeful, but lazy. Trusting God, but not willing to do any of the work that God called them to do. And this is part of the reason that Paul writes to the Thessalonians. That third reading we had right after the psalm, 2 Thessalonians 3, the people had started to get lazy. They had started to be working the way my kids pick up toys. Okay, kids, time to pick up. Okay. Well, look, a car. Nope, put it away. In the bin. Oh, look, a block. My kids are not picking up their toys. They're looking like they're busy, but they're not doing the work. They are not stepping out and trusting God. They're doing the things that make them look busy, but they aren't living out the trust that they have. And so Paul writes to them, I see you. I see you, lazy people. It is time to do what God called you to do. Yes, I know you're scared. Yes, I know there's too many things out of your control, but I also know the God who's with you in it. And Paul tells them, if you're not willing to do the work, this community can't support you. You've got to step up and follow the call. In the middle of all the things that are scary and all the worries about what somebody's going to say to you after you tell them about your faith, you still got to do the work. Because see, in all the chaos that we face in this world, that's how we trust in God. Not by sitting on our couches and saying, my thoughts and prayers are with, fill in the blank of the next tragedy, but by doing the work. But by knowing that whatever we intend for evil, God is somehow trying to work it into something good. And that however rude people are to us because we say, I don't know what's happening, but I'm trusting in God, and they make fun of us, or they laugh at us, or they just don't bother talking to us again. We trust that God is still somehow planted a seed, and that God is still nurturing and tending that seed in them so that they might know the hope that we have. And that when we're backed into a corner, and we're afraid of all of the things that we hear, that God is working to strengthen us, to encourage us, to give us the words, and then, please Jesus, the wisdom on when to use them. Because this warning is also an invitation to stand firm in our faith, to trust in God through all the bad news that we hear, to step out and to live a little bit of hope into a world that needs it. And we keep going because of what Jesus promised. We keep going because at the end of Matthew, when Jesus tells his disciples, after he's raised and moves on, he tells his disciples, go and do this work and remember I'm with you always to the end of the age. That's what gives us that confidence. That's what gives us that hope. That even when everything in God's world seems to be falling apart, that God is still with us in the midst of it. Even though the chaos isn't done, neither is God. Amen.